The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
The girls that you took, where are they? Where's your partner, Roger Henson? Who put the two of you up to this?
I got nothing to say.
Well, then you're gonna go down for all of it. You were driving the van. It's murder, 2 counts of kidnapping. Do you know how many years you're gonna be in jail for? It's in the triple digits. Tell us where the girls are. That's your only hope.
Let me know when my ambulance gets here.
I'd like a minute with him.
I just said I don't want to talk, so you can't question me. I have rights. I'm not going to say anything without a lawyer.
I'm not a cop.
Then who are you?
You remember the girl with the red hair? I'm her father. Please know, I will do whatever it takes to get her back. There's police on side are my friends. My daughter's friends, too. So it's just you and me.
If you touch me, I'll press charges.
I don't care. Where are they?
I'm just a driver. I don't know anything.
You know, Henson ditched the van for the black Yukon. So where did he go? Where did he take the girls? I won't ask you again, where did he take the girls?
Minute she knows, you'll know.
I wish that minute was now. It's all happening too fast and too slow at the same time.
Tell me what happened with Douglas Stevens.
I appealed to his humanity.
I didn't think you had that side to you.
When it comes to the people I love, I do.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, March the 6th, 2024. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's Just Right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Hate is a great motivator, especially when protecting the people and things that one loves. So it shouldn't be surprising that our hate-filled politicians have been motivated to ban the expression of hate, that is, expression of hate by the victims of their hate. Once again, Canada's politicians are on the banning hate speech bandwagon, this time in the guise of a piece of legislation being introduced in the Parliament as Bill C-63. I hate the whole bunch of them, I hate the content of Bill 63, and I hate anyone who could possibly draft such an evil and despicable proposal. Obscene and immoral don't even come close to describing it. The real immorality of censorship is not just in the fact that it violates the fundamental right of someone to speak freely, which it does, but because it violates the fundamental rights of those who wish to hear and listen freely. That's who the politicians are always afraid of. It's not the speaker. It's the spoken too. Censorship efforts are evidence that our politicians hate us. The misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation that they say they want to protect us from is always the truth. Because only truth is ever censored or banned. Find me an exception to that rule. Politicians don't want any of us to hear the truth because they know that truth is what sets the people free from them and from their influence, which is precisely why hate is one of the great motivators for my producing this show each and every week. And this week, my rant on censorship and the people behind it begins right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback at justrightmedia.org, hear us on WBCQ shortwave, Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. Well, it's difficult to know what to say, given the irrationality at work behind Canada's latest censorship endeavor. Bill C-63 has drawn the attention of a global audience, causing an awakening about the nature of Canada that defies its historical narrative and past understanding. Part of my difficulty in dealing with this is that the whole issue is so ludicrous and stupid that to even give it any attention is probably falling victim to becoming distracted from some greater threat, because it's so hard to take it seriously. But when governments want to control speech, whether directly by prohibiting it, subsidizing it, propagandizing it, or indirectly through the great psyop of political correctness, or by promising to protect citizens from harm, then you know that you're in trouble. Now, I still maintain that since the advent of the internet, the public at large was for the first time in history able to discern the facts and truths behind all of the narratives they were being exposed to. True, there's still a lot of BS and dubious material on the internet, including even the fake news media, but in the midst of all the voices being heard are a growing number of concerned individuals who actually care about the truth and whose audiences are growing in leaps and bounds as a consequence of that new emerging information source. And of course, that's the very problem with which our politicians are being confronted. Despite the billions they spend on propaganda and paying their own fake news media outlets, the truth is still overwhelming them. It's gotten to the point where their desperation has finally led them to pursue the very idea of creating a set of laws declaring uncommitted crimes of the future to be punishable in the present on the subjective grounds of anyone's suspicion, and to make illegal certain fundamental emotions experienced by all human beings all the time. Hard to believe? Well, on February 29th, just passed, Owen Schroyer interviewed Canada's Ezra Levant of Rebel Media about Canada's Bill C-63, and, again, I realize that what you will hear about that piece of legislation pushes the envelope of credibility and believability, given how ludicrous and irrational everything about it is. But even so, it seems to me that the real story behind Bill C-63 is about the kind of people that we have in society who could possibly entertain such propositions seriously. I mean, if anyone is deserving of hate, this group of people has certainly earned it. Now, there's a lot to absorb here, because just when you think it can't get any worse, well, there's always more.
Ezra Levant is not just a groundbreaker in the Canadian media. He's also an extremely concerned citizen. And he joins me now for the hour to talk about what Justin Trudeau is doing to censor Canadians' speech. And Ezra, I guess I would start this by saying, when Justin Trudeau comes out and talks about the rise of authoritarianism and anti-democratic activities, does he not see the irony in these statements when he makes them to the public? Surely the Canadian people do.
Yeah, I mean, he is a gaslighter extraordinaire. I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase DARVO. It's a psychological term. It's a deny. And then it's used sometimes, for example, to talk about psychological abuse. I want to make sure I get the exact acronym. Deny, attack, and reverse victim and offender. That's DARVO. So that's a kind of psychological manipulation. So Justin Trudeau, who wore blackface in three different decades of his life, when he was a teen, when he was in his 20s, when he was 30s, he wore blackface so many times he couldn't keep track. When he calls you the racist, he does the DARVO, deny, attack, and reverse victim and offender. He sexually assaulted a young woman named Rose Knight. But he'll call you the sexist. So the key to understanding Trudeau is as a psychological manipulator. He'll use the language of civil liberties while declaring martial law on his own people, which is what he did when the trucker convoy came to Ottawa. That martial law, called the Emergencies Act, was never even used during 9/11. But Trudeau inflicted it on peaceful protesters who were embarrassing him. You have to understand what a sociopath Trudeau is to understand what we're about to go through here. This new bill called C-63 was introduced by Trudeau this week. It's about 100 pages long, and there are probably 10 different nuclear bombs in there in regards to civil liberties. And I'd love just to dig into them, and I think, like I say, you'll probably believe me, but your viewers might say, that can't be. I went through a version of this about 15 years ago when I published the Danish cartoons of Mohammed, and I was investigated for 900 days by something called the Human Rights Commission. And so I was through a, sort of a beta test of this. But let me tell you what the real deal is. Are you ready? Should I just start going through the law?
Yeah, let's go through this because it's important that people understand as well. And you mentioned my case. Same thing happened. When people read my hearing sentencing documents, they said, wait a second, you're being imprisoned for chanting USA? You're being imprisoned for chanting 1776? Yes, quite literally. It's in their own documents. So that's how shocking this is. Ezra Levant, Rebel News Media, lay into these shocking, disturbing, almost impossible to believe laws that Justin Trudeau wants to put on the books.
There's about 10 things I want to share with you, so I won't linger too long on any one of them. The first thing you need to know is that hate is obviously a human emotion. We all know that. Sometimes we feel love, sometimes we feel hate, sometimes we feel contempt, sometimes we feel respect. That's a normal human personality. And you can no more ban hate than you could pass the Love Each Other Act to command us all to love each other. It's just part of human nature. And what we do as grown-ups is we try and control our hatred and transform it into positive energy to affect change, to campaign for a better world, whatever. You cannot eradicate hate from the human heart. But what I guess the essence of this bill, C-63, is it turns that feeling into a crime. It's not even a thought crime, Owen. It's a feelings crime. And let me just tell you, I think the building block of all this is that this law says it is now a crime. It is a form of discrimination to express hate on the internet. Actually, it's not even that blunt. If you say anything, even if it's true, Owen, even if it's reporting the news, Owen, that causes another person to make it, quote, likely to feel, to detest or vilify someone. So let's say you did a political commentary or a humorous sketch, or you just read the news, and that caused someone to have hard feelings. That's a crime, even if they don't act on it, even if it didn't actually happen, because the key word in the law is likely to expose a person to detestation, likely to. It's a future crime. It's a pre-crime. So now that you know that, let me go through it.
Well, and also, let's just lay it out. What you're saying is this bill would make that illegal. And the obvious question here would be, well, who decides what hate is? Well, we obviously have it figured out. It's them. They decide what hate is, and it's going to be whatever works for their political agenda.
Well, remember what Lavrenti Beria, the early secret police capo under Stalin, said. You remember what he said? He said, show me the man and I'll find you the crime. What does that mean? That means there are so many laws that are so vague and so open to political manipulation that everyone is guilty already. They just need to be charged. So the likely to expose a person to hate, it's a future tense crime. I saw you were playing a clip there from Minority Report. That's exactly what it is. So take my fellow Canadian, Jordan Peterson. He talks about transgenderism. He talks about other things in a really deep way, and it gets people riled up. He posts a lot on social media. So any post he's ever made, new or anything that's still online that he has control over, could be the subject of a complaint. And one of the ways people can complain is to a political quasi-judicial tribunal, not real judges. It's run by activists. It's called the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. Anyone in the country can complain. Actually, they don't even have to be a citizen. Anyone can complain to the Human Rights Commission. They don't have to hire a lawyer. They just have to file a complaint. It would be as easy as making a YouTube comment or a Twitter comment. But they do it instead of just shouting in Twitter. They file it with the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. The Canadian Human Rights Tribunal has a hearing. And if Jordan Peterson wins, he still had to hire a lawyer and waste his time. But if he loses, which he would, because he publishes things likely to expose a person to hatred or contempt, he has to pay the complainant $20,000 per complaint, and he has to pay a fine to the government of $50,000. And these are unlimited. You could have hundreds, you could have thousands, you could have every single tweet he's ever done, every single video he's ever done, theoretically, could be found against him. And the crazy part, this is where we're into the Star Chamber stuff. The identity of the complainant can be kept secret. This law also deals with the criminal code in Canada, and it contains a new standalone hate crime punishable by life in prison. I should tell you, Canada is so liberal, no one spends life in prison. No one does. But for hate crimes, this new bill creates a life in prison sentence for hate criminals. That's a fact. I talked about this human rights tribunal that's basically putting a $20,000 bounty on each complaint that you can bring before them, and it gives people secrecy to make the complaints. That's insane, and I think that's how they're going to go after conservatives like me or Jordan Peterson. But let me tell you something even darker, and I think this is going to give you some January 6th vibes. You know what a restraining order is. They're often used in a domestic dispute. Let's say, God forbid, a man is beating his wife. She can go to court and get a restraining order, which is basically an order that he's not allowed to come within a certain number of feet of her, not allowed to call her, etc. At the end of the day, it's a piece of paper. You can't stop a fist, but it's basically a warning, stay away. We use restraining orders when there's a case like I've just described, domestic violence. But this C-63 creates a restraining order against what? Against fists? Against violence? No. Against hate speech. So if someone out there, you think he might engage in hate speech in the future, he hasn't done so yet, you can go to a judge. They are adding a crime to the Canadian Criminal Code called fear of hate, fear of hate propaganda offense or hate crime. And I'm just going to read it to you because it's very short. The new section 810.0121 of our criminal code will now read, if this bill passes, a person may, with the Attorney General's consent, lay an information before a provincial court judge if the person fears, on reasonable grounds, that another person will commit an offense under section 318 or 319. And those are the hate speech provisions. What does this mean? If you're afraid that someone's going to say something bad, they haven't done it yet. They have not done it yet. But if you have a fear that someone's going to engage in hate speech or hate propaganda, you can go to a judge and then scroll down a tiny bit there. The provincial court judge may cause the parties to appear. And then look at part three. Yeah, you've got it on the screen there. Perfect. Great work. Thanks, guys. I want it because you're not going to believe me if you didn't see this with your own eyes. If the provincial court judge before whom the parties appear is satisfied by the evidence adduced that the informant has reasonable grounds for the fear, the judge may order that the defendant enter into a recognizance to keep the peace and be of good behavior for a period of not more than 12 months. Now, what does that mean? Scroll down to subsection 6. It's just a little bit further down, called conditions in recognizance. So I'm using some legal jargon, recognizance. Basically, it's a peace bond. It's a restraining order because someone's afraid you're going to say something really mean. You haven't done it yet. But look at section 6. Look at what the judge can do. A, wear an electronic monitoring device. B, return to and remain at their place of residence at specified times. That's called house arrest. C, abstain from the consumption of drugs or alcohol. D, provide, for the purpose of analysis, a sample of bodily substance. They can make you give blood or urine. E, that's more on blood or urine. F, abstain from communicating directly or indirectly with any person identified in the recognizance, or refrain from going to any place specified in the recognizance, except in accordance with the condition 7, seize your lawful firearms. And by the way, if you don't agree with any of this, you go straight to prison. It's all there in Bill C-63. We've gone through the text. I don't want to get bogged down in there, but let me sum it up. You didn't have to do anything yet. It's called fear of hate propaganda offense or hate crime. This is about words, Owen. This is not just words. It's about feelings. Hate is a feeling, Owen. If someone is afraid, you're going to say something that will cause someone else to have hard feelings, a likely to offense. It doesn't even have to happen. I'm afraid he's going to say something that might cause someone to have hard feelings. You can get them locked up. That is the coming law in Canada.
So, Ezra, get into now the weeds of this.
Sure, and I'd go further. It's a feelings crime. And by the way, let me just talk for one more minute about the feeling called hate. We don't like to be hateful. We don't like to see hate in others. It's sort of an ugly emotion. But if you ask people why they hate something, they usually, if they're telling the truth, say there's an underlying grievance of some sort. They're angry about something. They feel something was done wrong. So if you want to deal with hate, deal with the underlying grievance. Simply telling someone who has hard feelings you're not allowed to feel that way, that's not going to make them change their mind. Like I say, you can't force someone to love each other. But frankly, speech is a safety valve. People can blow off steam with free speech, because I tell you, there's a correlation between countries where you're allowed to blow off steam with the First Amendment and peace versus countries where you're not allowed peaceful criticism of the world. And so people resort to violence.
Got a kick out of that expression, DARVO, deny, attack, reverse, victim, offender. Because it seems to me an unnecessarily complicated way of describing what we've always been calling projection. Projection is an amazing phenomenon, especially on the left. For example, every accusation made against Donald Trump by the Biden camp turned out to be exactly what the Biden camp was doing all along. Over and over and over again, this same pattern repeats. Interestingly, on the subject of human rights tribunals, I've had a bit of my own experience in this regard, having been the first person ever to win a case before an Ontario Human Rights Tribunal. But more to Ezra's point that, quote, I went through this with the Danish cartoons of Muhammad 15 years ago as a beta test, end quote. Well, how coincidental that he should have mentioned that, because on April 9th, 2009, 15 years ago, Ezra appeared as our guest on Just Right, along with Salim Mansour, who was still at that time being described as a Toronto Sun columnist, professor of political science, University of Western Ontario. It was the 98th broadcast of Just Right, and a quick perusal of our blog post related to that show gives us a pretty good idea of what we were talking about at the time. For example, Shakedown, The Trials of Ezra Levant, and his book by the same name. Human Rights Commissions, The Kangaroo Courts of Canada. Free Speech, A Canadian Tradition or a New Idea? It's Not Funny. Comedy, that is. Yeah, it's always amazing how tyrannical politicians are completely intolerant of humor, especially when it's about them. But when Ezra informed us of how anyone can complain about someone by filing with the Human Rights Tribunal, and that the identity of the complainant can be kept secret, I was reminded of the fact that in my own defense of a landlord being falsely accused of racism, the complainant was openly recruited by left-wing activists intent on stealing the landlord's property for government-funded social housing. And their recruiting efforts were all openly published and reported on and in the pages of the local newspaper. And the people doing the recruiting were the same left-wing activists who argued for the landlord being declared racist before the Human Rights Commission itself. That became a pretty powerful piece of evidence for me to use in my defense of my respondent, the landlord. But the point to be made here is that this kind of political corruption is nothing new, nor are the attempts to silence freedom of speech anything new. And the arguments, they're always the same. So now they say they want to ban expressions of hate. And that tells me that this is about far more than just censorship. Here's why. Hate and love originate from the same process, the process of valuation and self-preservation. As we heard in our show opener today, hatred became the motivator for a father to protect the child that he loved. Without that anger and hatred, he may not have been able to act in the means necessary to protect a child that he loved. Love and hate, two sides of the same coin. And now this is important and highly critical to our understanding of the greater issue at hand. Though we regard love and hate as emotions, which they undeniably are, no question, but we fail to recognize that each of these emotions and all gradients between each extreme are emotionally expressed measurements of values. That's what they are. To love is to value, to appreciate. To hate is to disvalue, to condemn. To like, dislike, or otherwise have no particular emotional reaction to something are all the gradients or degrees of emotion between the two polarized emotions of love and hate. So call it an emotional spectrum, if you will. But no matter where on that spectrum one finds oneself, none of these emotional states poses any kind of physical threat of harm to anyone. Now, Ayn Rand made a very interesting observation about the nature of love, and I quote, "To love is to value. Only a rationally selfish man, a man of self-esteem, is capable of love, because he is the only man capable of holding firm, consistent, uncompromising, unbetrayed values. The man who does not value himself cannot value anything or anyone," end quote. And on the flip side of that coin, here's what Ayn Rand had to say on the nature of hatred and those who, you know, hate the good for being the good, and I quote, "They do not want to own your fortune. They want you to lose it. They do not want to succeed. They want you to fail. They do not want to live. They want you to die. They desire nothing. They hate existence, and they keep running, each trying not to learn that the object of his hatred is himself. They are the essence of evil. They, those anti-living objects who seek, by devouring the world, to fill the selfless zero of their soul. It's not your wealth they're after. Theirs is a conspiracy against the mind, which means against life and man," end quote, and which also means for censorship of everything from feelings to thoughts. It's not so much the outrageous and irrational aspects of the proposed legislation that is to be feared. It is the people who would even suggest such laws. And I think they have no right to live in a free society. They're dangerous to the rest of us. Not only do they hate themselves, I'll say it again, I hate them too. Anyone who could utter such hatred has earned the hate reflected back on them. It's as simple as that. So here's another round with Owen Schroyer and Ezra Levant, wherein Owen asks what seems to be an obvious question, given how complaints are made before the human rights tribunals.
So you ask, well, what do we do to stop this? Well, do we try to get ahead of it? Does Ezra Levant come out and all the people that lie about Ezra Levant and all the people that write negative stories about Ezra Levant and Rebel News and slander you and libel you, do you get ahead of it and you say, hey, these people are causing hate against me? Do you go to the court first and you say, all the people that have called you names, all the people that have lied about you and tried to destroy your character, do you get ahead of this and you say, hey, they're going to cause hatred to come to me? They're putting out speech that's anti-me. Do you get ahead of this so that they can see how this could be applied both ways, or to prove that it is only one direction?
Justin Trudeau hand picks the members of the so-called Canadian Human Rights Tribunal. They're not appointed for life. They're appointed for a short period of time. And so they want to ingratiate themselves with Trudeau by giving him the answers he wants. They're activists. They're not real judges. So if I were to go before the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal and say, well, Justin Trudeau has fomented hatred against me, for example, during the lockdowns, Trudeau really demonized unvaccinated people. He basically said they shouldn't have the same rights as other people. He set up a no-fly list. If you were not jabbed, you were not allowed on an airplane or a train in Canada, the second largest country in the world. Trudeau hates the unvaccinated. He hates Christians. He's very clear. But if you were to try and go to the Human Rights Tribunal and say he's discriminating against me because of hate speech, because of my religion, they'd laugh you out of there because they're all woke activists just like him. It's getting more dangerous for freedom up here. The former minister who actually put the bones of this law together, his name's Stephen Guilbeault, a heritage minister who drafted the law, said that they reserved for themselves the nuclear option. What does that mean? He was talking about making it impossible to access a website anywhere in the country. So he was asked, well, what happens if a website is not compliant? What happens if someone just doesn't stop saying these bad words? And he answered plainly. He said, he called it the nuclear option, and he said they'll just block an entire website. We're going down that road. Facebook has already been half banned in Canada. Facebook cannot publish Canadian news unless it forks over $100 million. So they're out of here. You know, Justin Trudeau, he's a strange character, but one of the things you can tell is what he cares about. Because he has, in the last 2 years, he has pushed through 3 different laws about censoring the internet. He doesn't have 3 laws about dealing with inflation, or 3 laws dealing with crime, or 3 laws dealing with the carbon tax, or 3 laws dealing with foreign affairs. No. The thing he is obsessed with, the thing that he's throwing all his energy behind, is internet censorship. Here's a detail for you that you might find weird. You call it, your attorney general. We call it the minister of justice. Same thing. But he just had his title, his official title was changed. The title of our attorney general is now minister of justice, attorney general, and minister of state for online harms. That's what this new censorship bill is called, online harms. What does that mean, Owen? Censorship is now in his official job description, Owen. It is the most important thing to Justin Trudeau. More bills than anything else, more punishment. There's no life in jail in Canada for anything. Now there is for hate speech, and it is now the official name of the Justice Minister.
All right, so Canadian Minister of Justice and Attorney General Arif Virani says that the new online harms bill enhances free expression. Here's what he has to say.
This is what the Online Harms Act will do. Under this bill, major online services will have 3 overarching obligations: a duty to protect children, a duty to act responsibly, and the duty to remove the most egregious content. This bill targets the worst of what we see online, content that sexually victimizes children or re-victimizes survivors, intimate content shared without consent, content that incites violence, extremism, or terrorism, content that incites violence or foments hatred, and content that is used to bully a child or induce a child to self-harm. This bill will establish a new digital safety commission to make sure that online services comply with their new obligations, as well as an ombudsperson to advocate for users and victims of online harm.
It's good to protect kids. I'm all in favor of protecting children. I'm all about it. However, it seems that they're not into protecting children. Well, this is Brian Lilly opining on how the online harms bill could be seriously abused. Take a listen.
It's if someone is suspected that they might partake in a hate crime, they can be arrested and put under house arrest to stop them from committing the crime. This is flagrantly unconstitutional. There's no way that this would stand. And you know, I actually think that of a few parts of the bill. This is a very problematic bill that the government is going to wrap itself up in the mantle of saying, we are protecting children. Why are you against protecting children from online harm? But you've got the pre-crime stuff. You've got life sentences for hate crimes. That's putting it up there with first degree murder. Now, unless you commit a hate crime where you kill a bunch of people motivated by hate, I don't see that standing up in court. Mm-hmm. And it would be absolutely bizarre for that to stand. So there have been some calls to separate the bill out, the portions that deal with protecting kids from sexual exploitation and such, plus all this other stuff, which has nothing to do with protecting kids. Put them out as two bills, debate them, fix them. But this thing, it will not stand if it's passed.
So that's good news, isn't it, JT? Like what he's saying is it won't work. It'll be fought. It's and people are beginning to talk about this across the world, like that, you know, what a communist state we're becoming, you know, that Canada. Now, I think, you know, Trudeau's Liberals just want to pass things like this. It's so hideous that
they're on their way out.
Right. They want to do as much damage as they can on the way out to Canadian families, because that's what they've done all along. They're, you know, all of this indoctrination and the stuff that's come in the last 8 years of this hideous Trudeau experience.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. I don't know about you, but when a person who's projecting announces that he's going to do something to protect children from abuse and violence, odds are that that person is abusing children. And I don't even think it matters if the law will not stand if passed, because it will have to be challenged in the courts, and that could take years, during which time the fear and intimidation intended by the censors takes its toll on the rest of the population. Again, remember, this is part of a much larger phenomenon, global, and has been in play for many decades now. The hideous Trudeau experience will just simply be replaced by the hideous fill-in-the-blank politician's name experience. Whether viewed as an emotion or a value judgment, hate by itself is unable to cause harm. And the reason that politicians fear the hate of their constituents is because hate is a strong motivator for action. And action is another matter entirely. So will it be rational action or will it be irrational action? Will it be ballot or bullet? So it would do well to revisit our appraisal of love and hate in the light of these considerations. And to that end, it is always my pleasure to cite the works of Scottish philosopher John McMurray, whose view on this subject transcends that of most philosophers. And this is from his book, Reason and Emotion, published in 1935. And I quote, "What can it mean, then, to distinguish between rational and irrational feelings? We are in the habit of saying that our feelings are just felt. They can't be either true or false. They just are what they are. Our thoughts, on the other hand, can be true or false. About that, we have no difficulty. Yet if we think carefully, we shall realize that there is no special difference between feelings and thoughts in this respect. Our thoughts are just what we think. We just think them, and they are what they are. How, then, can they be either true or false? The answer is that their truth or falsity does not lie in them, but in a relation between them and the things to which they refer. True thoughts are thoughts which refer properly to reality, and which are thought in terms of the nature of the object to which they refer. Why should our feelings be in any different case? Since our feelings refer to what is outside them, to some object about which they are felt, why should they not refer rightly or wrongly to their object, just like thoughts? In thinking thoughts, we think the things to which the thoughts refer. In feeling emotions, we feel the things to which the emotions refer, and therefore we can feel rightly or wrongly." End quote. And now here's the real philosophical bomb that only John McMurray would drop. Quote, "It is not that our feelings have a secondary and subordinate capacity for being rational or irrational. It is that reason is primarily an affair of emotion, and that the rationality of thought is the derivative and secondary one. It is emotion which stands directly behind activity, determining its substance and direction, while thought is related to action indirectly and through emotion, determining only its form, and that only partially, end quote. That is really something profound. The hierarchy is the reverse of what most people would expect. You know, I've always argued that reason is a function of both thought and emotion, and I was aware that emotion is the motivating force, but to say that reason is primarily an affair of emotion is something I hadn't fully considered in that context. And McMurray continues, quote, "The real problem of the development of emotional reason is to shift the center of feeling from the self to the world outside. We can only begin to grow up into rationality when we begin to see our own emotional life not as the center of things, but as part of the development of humanity. Objective emotion is not a mere reaction to stimulus. It is an immediate appreciation of the value and significance of real things. Emotional reason is our capacity to apprehend objective values. The capacity to love objectively is the capacity which makes us persons. It is the ultimate source of our capacity to behave in terms of the object. It is the core of rationality," end quote. So when it comes to the emotion of hate, the real consideration that matters is whether that hate is irrationally motivated or whether it is rationally motivated. Is someone's hate just based on a subjective inward basis, or is it based on something real and justifiable? Like, for example, based on what our politicians have been doing to us over the last several years. And as Ezra Levant suggested earlier in the show, we cannot ban hate because it's part of human nature, but we can control hatred and campaign for a better world. And isn't that a great way of describing my own hatred that I referred to at the beginning of the show in being what motivates me to produce this show each week? I'm campaigning for a better world. And to that end, I'd like to share with you the essence of a July 2019 presentation made by Katie Hopkins at the Oxford Union in Britain. At issue was the subject of platforming. Not deplatforming on the internet, but refusing someone an Oxford Union platform in advance. Now, on her YouTube channel, Katie Hopkins is described as a British media personality and former columnist. She covers topics such as politics, culture, crime, and humor, often with provocative and controversial views. And on Wikipedia, Katie Hopkins is described as, quote, "an English media personality, columnist, and far-right political commentator. She has been involved in several controversies, legal issues, and media scandals for her comments on migrants, race, and COVID-19, end quote. Well, the Katie Hopkins you're about to hear next never heard about COVID-19, because this recording was made about 5 years ago in July of 2019, before anyone really heard of COVID-19. And still, she was considered controversial then.
And I now look to Katie Hopkins to continue the case for the opposition tonight.
Just a warning, if you start dinging anything at me, I will ding you back. You may have seen today Danny Baker has got himself, you can laugh, even if you hate me, it's possible. Both of those things consistently together are possible. Danny Baker today was fired for a tweet. He lost his radio show. Now, you may say it was a terrible tweet, a racist tweet. How dare he? What an awful thing to do. I genuinely don't believe a guy with a radio show on BBC would send that tweet meaning what people have inferred it to mean. You just could not be that stupid. In the same way that I was fired from my radio show for my tweet, it is not possible that you would send a tweet like that in the hope of causing that level of offence. I genuinely believe people apply offence. You guys apply offence because you choose to. I don't give offence. You choose to take it. And you need to make better choices, in my opinion. You call yourself educated people. I'm just not sure of that sometimes. You know, yesterday, I was surprised to receive an email from The Guardian, terrible paper. Again, employs short people that wear sweaters, Owen Jones. I mean, who does that? The Guardian saying, could they have a comment, please? Because Naz Shah MP was not going to turn up because I'm here speaking. Naz Shah was not going to turn up to support the proposition that there should be no platforming because she didn't want to give me a platform. Has anyone else got that worked out? Has anyone got that kind of, the sort of lizard starting to eat its own tail? She didn't turn up to support these guys because she thought I shouldn't be given a platform to argue back against her. You know, it's an absolute madness. We have entered a territory, a realm that's impossible to conceive. It's a bit like listening to your argument, sir, where we can't have the proposition that's the opposition because we can't not no platform anyone. I didn't really get any of that. But I think the fact that we don't have Naz here is a pity, but she didn't just walk away, did she? She didn't just say she wouldn't come to the debate. What she did first was to ring these guys to say that she was thinking of not coming to the debate, hoping, in turn, that I would be no-platformed. And that's precisely how these individuals operate. They like to try and have other people removed from the debate in order that they can be here. But I would like to thank the union for being true to its founding principles, this union with no political views of its own, a space specifically for people with controversial views, for firebrands. Darling, are you not hot? I think we do best, actually, as a country, when we have people and we are able to disarm them. And sometimes that's with humour, and sometimes that's with debate. Thank you very much for that. It was well delivered, and I still think you're splendidly dressed, so thank you. The union was built for a time just like this, except 200 years ago. It was built at a time when university authorities didn't think it was a good idea for the little people to have ideas of their own, because uncontrolled speech might lead to bad things. People might question stuff. The narrative might be challenged. Hidden truths might be revealed. In 1823, your predecessors began this noble crusade, and now it is for you to continue their charge. And the fight is a noble one. Speech is not controversial in and of itself, just as a meal is neither delicious nor rancid. It is determined by the diner. And it seems to me that the listener, just like Celeste, is weaker than ever before. Ears are as delicate now as rice paper, and the Overton window has closed almost to a cat flap. You know, there was a time when I was just an over-opinionated woman in a white suit with patience issues, and now I'm virtually Mussolini. And I don't mind that. That's not problematic for me. I'm comfortable with who I am. But it does rather beg the question, where does this all end up? I ask you, where does no platforming end? Will this House start to censor individual words? Will you start to hand out forms requiring that people don't damage those who are weaker or less right? When the agreement is the precursor to debate, what will be the point of the opposition at all? Will you even have motions anymore, I ask you? Or will you all just come here to nod, like dogs? And who will be the arbiter of what is controversial? Where is the metric, tell me? Who knows how to measure what is controversial? Celeste suggests we know the difference between right and wrong. Who decides that stuff? Who's going to be the one who makes the decision who can come here? How are their opinions right or wrong or justified? There is no known metric. There is no controversy meter. Just some crap clapometer dependent on the outrage of the mob. As employers fire workers for expressing personal opinions online, and police knock doors in New Zealand for wrongthink on the Christchurch shootings, or I'm forced to sign a document saying what I am allowed to say, what I'm not allowed to say, who I'm not allowed to offend in any room, are we really going to call that progress? Is this really taking us forward? What are we so frightened of? You know, for all your curiosities, I trust you guys. I trust you to know what you think, to form your own opinion, and I respect that you will either love me, hate me, loathe me, think I'm intellectually deficient, agree with me, whatever, when you choose to leave this debating chamber. But I afford you the courtesy of respecting your intellectual capability to decide that. And I do not need someone in a position of authority to decide for you what you will be allowed to hear. I think that's what you need to be standing up for as young people in this union. You need to be standing up for the right to listen to people who you then go on to decide you do not agree with. Once someone starts to mandate what you can't hear, how narrow, how small is this window going to get? How tiny your space, your worldview, just how small do you want it to be? I fear for the day that someone gets into this union and starts to know platform speakers, because there will never be a return from that. You are on the precipice. You are on the cusp of something monumental here. When you walk through that door, you can't unwalk that decision. You can't take back the wrong decision. And to vote with the proposition tonight will be the wrong decision. We are 1823. Outside, the ordinary man's voices, as Anne will tell you, 17.4 million of us watching our vote overturned, the ordinary man's voice is reduced to a whisper. In a time of industrial levels of censorship and outrage, this small house needs to roar like a lion. And roar we will. Thank you very much for being here.
Katie Hopkins says that uncontrolled speech may lead to questioning things. Well, exactly. But particularly significant was Hopkins' observation that, quote, people applied offense. I don't give offense. You choose to take it. Make better choices as educated people, end quote. Well, hooray, hooray. I mean, this speaks to John McMurray's distinguishing between rational and irrational feelings, doesn't it? And what an understatement it was to conclude that the ordinary man's voice has been reduced to a whisper in a time of industrial-level censorship and outrage. And you know, the big question that begs asking about that is not so much about free speech itself, but what about the specific topics of discussion that are being so vehemently avoided? What are they? What is it we're not supposed to talk about? Well, let's see. There's the rising death toll from the COVID reactions. There's Donald Trump and stolen elections. There's Trudeau's corruption and love of communist dictatorships. There's the war in Ukraine. There's the Marxist gender BS that's being used as a means of dividing people and creating hate. There's the fact that we actually have political prisoners in both the US and Canada. There's a corrupt court system. There's no justice. There's the changing of definitions and terms to destroy the ability of people to think and reason. There's the end of the democratic process itself. What access do people have to their governments anymore? There's Putin and Russia. Don't talk about them. And then there's climate change, which, as I've always said, has always been about changing our political climate. It has nothing to do with the weather. And then there's the persecution of Christians and the protection of Islam. There's globalism and the deep state. And then there's pronouns. I mean, I could go on and on and on. These are all the sensitive issues they don't want anybody talking about. The only victim of censorship, remember this always, is the truth. And what you're left with is disinformation and misinformation. And when Katie Hopkins proclaimed that, quote, "I don't need authority to decide for you what you are allowed to hear," end quote, she properly framed the issue and identified the true target of the censors, the spoken two. Censorship is rarely about silencing the speakers. It's about deafening the listener. Censorship is motivated by the fear that the speaker's message will resonate with the listener, and it is a fear shared and experienced by all tyrants and people who must uphold a lie in order to avoid accountability or justice. You know, it's really remarkable how even tyrannies require the consent of the people that they are ruling. Of course, much of that consent is manufactured consent created by a web of lies, propaganda, and censoring to control the narrative required to create the desired consent. But still, it's a necessary ingredient of their holding power. And to close off today's show, I'd like to share with you part of what I wrote in a blog post of May 24th, 2018 on Just Right. In the world of identity politics, common sense, logic, justice, and reason do not rule. Identity politics is, frankly, simply another way of saying racist and sexist politics. Politics based on the leftist notion of group identities rather than on recognizing the sovereignty of the individual. Consumed by many hatreds based on group identities, which can only lead to more irrational hatreds, the left blames these collective hatreds on the right in the hopes of, once again, leveling yet another imaginary gap, a morality gap. But even here, the gap is not a gap, it's only a difference, a moral difference, a difference between moral and immoral. Unfortunately, leftists' hurling of hate speech accusations has been most effective in silencing those against whom the accusations were made, irrespective of the facts. After all, who wants to be associated with hating? And isn't hate always something to be fought and eliminated? Well, actually, no. The belief that all hate should be eliminated is both wrong and hypocritical. Even hating hate is still hate. What those intent on eliminating hate really mean is eliminating free speech. When it comes to hate, the left hates individualism. It hates freedom, it hates free speech, it hates private property, it hates justice, it hates capitalism, to name but a few hatreds of the left. And worse, the left doesn't tolerate anyone on the right talking about those hated things. Once it's understood what the left hates, then it should also be understood why hating what's left is just right. And another thing that's just right is your choosing to join us again next week when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Earlier, you guys were talking about the fact that this side of the room was mostly right-wing and this side of the room was mostly left. Well, I think that's not entirely true. I think this side of the room is right and you guys are just wrong. I think the only thing probably you proved in your talk, in the duration of your talk, was that you can count to five. I was asked recently to speak at Exeter University and I agreed. When I got there, inside the building, I was asked to film a form, a legal declaration that I would not cause offence to anybody in the room. I was told if I did not sign this form, I would be physically removed from Exeter University debating chamber by the security. Now, the security looked like a vegan, so I didn't much... I didn't much fancy his chances anyway at the best of times. Hands up in this room who's a vegan. I mean, God help this debating society if vegans ever get in power. There will be a trillion... a truly terrible moment. Short people and vegans, two things I simply can't stand. They must never run this Oxford Union.